Hello and welcome to the Flight Free Podcast, the place for uplifting stories, grounded adventures, and enlightening reasons why not to fly. For the next 25 minutes, we hope to inspire, inform, and entertain. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride.
Hello, and welcome to another Flight Free Podcast. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Anna. For this episode, we're going to be talking about activism. So we have three guests. Firstly, Sel, who lived at the protest camp Grow Heathrow for several years. Ian, who's involved with GALBA, which is the Group for Action Against Leeds Bradford Airport. And we're also going to be joined by Alice from Sky Rebellion. So to set the scene, Rachel, can you give us our flight free fact?
Flight free fact.
Over 4 billion passengers fly globally in a typical year, and that figure is growing. Despite COVID, every major UK airport has plans to expand, with many hoping to double passenger numbers by 2030. Big airports mean more flights, more emissions, but also more noise and local air pollution for nearby residents.
Okay, thanks, Rachel. Let's welcome Sel first.
Hi, Sel.
You spent 2 years living at the protest camp Grow Heathrow.
Can you tell us a little bit about Grow Heathrow and what it's all about, please?
Yeah, thanks, Rachel. Yeah, initially it was started as a transition town to build a resilient community to transition away from fossil fuels. And in that model, the community aspect was inseparable from the getting off fossil fuels and evolving society aspect. So yeah, it was founded as Transition Heathrow, and Grow Heathrow was the kind of project that put it into practice. Samson shut the window in a way. And the practice was Grow Heathrow, the actual occupation of the land. And we were based in Sipson, which is a small village near Heathrow. And yeah, it was all about working with the locals and helping them resist the expansion of Heathrow Airport, which the third runway, which would basically make that area even less habitable. There was one village, I think it was called Longford, that was going to be totally annihilated and just concreted over. Yeah, the interests of people, mainly frequent flyers, was being put over, you know, settled people in villages.
And what drew you personally to Transition Heathrow?
That's a good question, Rachel. I think it's a mixture for me. One good motive and one not bad motive, but the wrong motive. So the good motive was, I think I've always been interested in like other radical communities, in ideas around socialism and community and definitely environmentalism. So it basically spoke to me on that level. But I was in quite a bad housing situation, and Grow Heathrow offered a kind of escape from that.
And what was it like actually living there? Like, what was it like being part of that community?
We call it kind of the honeymoon period. The first few months is like heaven. It's like euphoria, freedom and excitement. And yeah, I'm quite a shy and reserved person, but those first few months, you know, being appreciated and finding my way into the community and waking up to the sound of the wind turbines, that is the sound of the future, and the songbirds as well. I had a tent literally beneath a damson tree, so I would have birds wake me up in the morning. It was so beautiful. And as time goes on, you get a bit less utopian, but it's still better than living in the rented capitalist housing market. And everyone, I think, should go and try it if you're interested in environmental living. Find the community, because it is so amazing.
I was just wondering, how many people were there? Were you all there with a common goal in terms of campaigning against the third runway?
It changed quite a lot. You'd have people come and go, and there's a beauty to like these drifters. The people just drifting would come along and stay for a few weeks and get guests. There was a hardcore of like activists who were like full on engaged with the community and the project. And then there were others who were generally about living off grid and were still activists, but not quite as focused on the third runway. Even me, you know, sometimes I was just there to cook and do growing and show people around and be that side of things and not being so involved in the activism. Transition towns, the community aspect is how we transition off fossil fuels. Was it sustainable? It could have been more sustainable. And there was still an undercurrent of that work ethic and guilt just for existing. You know, you have to go and work and stuff. So it's like, if you can't build sustainable communities in this model, you're not going to transition from anything. You're just going to end up back in capitalism as an isolated individual, which has happened to me to a certain degree. So it's like that emotional sustainability, which you have to learn. We have to learn how to work in communities, how to disagree with each other, how to work together, how to deal with disputes. And it's hard to do the activism, live through winters in a tent and always struggling, and then to also deal with internal problems. It just gets too much because we can't transcend society.
So it sounds like you learned a lot during that 2-year experience and learned things that actually many of us may never experience. Would you say you feel that activism can be quite successful in that arena and that was the best course of action against Heathrow at that time?
Yeah, Rachel, 100%, 100%. I don't see my experience there as a failure. It's a learning process. And it's like, how amazing is it to have a space where we can live together in abandoned greenhouses and grow crops and share food and have strangers come through and tell stories and play songs and put on plays and bring art and music and culture. It's like incredible. If I hadn't done that, my life would be 10 times worse. I'm so glad I did it. Even if it doesn't last, even if you make mistakes, it's fine. It's part of the process and it's worth it. Let's do what we can within the system and try and build, something new in the shell of the old system,
And you mentioned songs, and of course you wrote a song which became a bit of a grow anthem. So let's hear a bit of the song now. Tell us a little bit about the lyrics and the inspiration behind the song.
All the excitement of Goipro, the kind of, the sacred aspect, the ritual aspect of living in the woods, the courage of my friends, bold are the warriors. It's like we were eco-warriors, we were true, and we were fighting. And the song does end with "Now only axes shall sing." So it's like, which is basically a kind of metaphor for the woods being chopped down, but like we fought it, and that's so it's worth it, and the legend lives on, and maybe that will inspire the next generation of activists.
Inspire a next generation of activists for sure, and there's no bigger act of activism than camping in the path of where they are going to build. So, yeah, a really interesting sort of way to live and way to approach it, and what an incredible experience.
But then at the same time, it wasn't just about protesting the new runway, was it? It was about the relationship we have with nature. It was about discovering the whole wider issues here. I think that was also really inspiring.
Yes, so inspiring. And not only his relationship with nature, but his relationship with the other inhabitants, and how that is a real sort of reflection on human nature and how we interact as a species.
Definitely. And it's so hard, isn't it? Because we do live within this capitalist system. And I love how Grow Heathrow was challenging that. Yeah, super amazing stuff from Sel. Really interesting to hear his story. Okay, so let's hear from Alice now. So Alice set up Sky Rebellion as a kind of aviation-focused version of Extinction Rebellion. So let's hear from Alice now.
So hi, Alice. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for talking to us today. So many of our listeners will have heard of Extinction Rebellion, but maybe not Sky Rebellion. So could you give us a bit of background about Sky Rebellion, please?
I thought many people weren't aware that there are actually 21 airport expansions on the cards in the UK, and that our emissions aren't even factored into our net zero commitments, or at least they weren't at the time I started Sky Rebellion. So there's all these problems on the table. One, we don't count our emissions. Two, aviation fuel isn't taxed in the UK. Three, there's loads of industry workers with nowhere to go at the moment. And four, just the sheer number behind the airport expansions, which are mostly investment driven for the profits of their shareholders, which they're sold to us on a jobs-based narrative. And what's actually happening, if you look at it, is our current government principles are to create an economy ripe for investment. However, that means we just focusing on that for the profit of the shareholders abroad, which own the investment companies trying to do the airport expansions. So I thought there are all these problems that people might need to be made aware of.
Well, what inspired you personally to get involved in aviation or to be an aviation campaigner?
Well, in XR, I've always been, and XR as a whole, is really trying to concentrate on global justice issues. And I think when it came to my attention that only 17% of the world's population fly, and that 1% of the most frequent flyers cause 50% of the emissions from flying. And then when you hear the testimonies of the people it affects in the rest of the world, I think that's a very severe global justice issue. And it's been reiterated by people such as the Prime Minister Bob Ados lately that some element of social and corporate responsibility needs to be built into business and investment. But unfortunately, our government policy at the moment thinks mainly in terms of economics. And to quote Liz Truss, companies such as EasyJet have opened up equality to a mass market and low-income families in a way that numerous government programmes have failed to achieve. But that's how they're seeing this cheap flight and in terms of only economic prowess. And there's absolutely no responsibility by government or by industry in that sort of philosophy.
And no mention of any of the negative impact either, which is really scary because that affects everybody, even those who don't access flights. So
David Morgan of EasyJet actually says customers are happy and more satisfied when they know their flights are offset. So customers are being sold off offsets now by EasyJet as a placatory measure. And this offsets are sold to customers on the basis that that absolves them of their responsibility. But that's not the case. I don't think customers have a deep understanding of the issues around flying and also the elitism of flying and the consequences on the rest of the world.
Completely agree. And the fact that the government has said it has boosted equality is just painful to listen to, given the injustice, global injustice of flying, as you mentioned earlier. And in terms of Sky Rebellion, if you were to sum up the aims, what would they be and how are you going about achieving them?
So our aims and objectives are to create a much broader understanding of the issues to enable people to choose with full knowledge of what they're choosing. And I believe that if they were equipped with that knowledge, it would change behaviour quite significantly. So what I'm trying to do also is gather testimonies from around the world of people directly affected by the consequences of this. And one example was we went to the conference of the CEO of Heathrow the other day, who was stating that other countries are dependent on our tourism for their trade. Yet you have, in opposition to that, you have a statement by Mia Mottley of Barbados saying that if high-emitting countries don't reduce their emissions immediately, they're committing climate genocide. And that's what people don't know.
What have you learned so far from Sky Rebellion, the campaign so far?
Well, I've had to learn a whole lot about aviation. I've learned that, as with everything, actually, it all comes back to the same things about fairness, distribution of resources in the world, lobbying by large corporations and shareholders and investment processes and regulatory processes. And also I've learned a lot about the links to investment and shareholders. I'll give you one example of Bristol. So the investment company is actually a pension company which profits the Teachers of Ontario, and it wants to build on greenbelt land in this country to profit its shareholders in Canada. So that's another aspect of the injustice that I'm trying to focus on as well.
Okay, so what do you think we can achieve through activism?
Consumer-led change. And we also need to place a lot of responsibility on corporations. They operate to make a profit for themselves and their shareholders. So they should factor into that business model all of the consequences of their actions for making that profit.
Final question. This is the big one. If you were Prime Minister, what would you do?
Well, you see, I'll state in advance, I think my policies would differ somewhat from those of the current cabinet. And I would actually respond to the demand from all companies, including airlines and including oil companies, for a regulatory approach. I would go for regulation all the way, because that's the only way to achieve significant change in a short space of time.
Totally agree. I would vote for Alice as Prime Minister.
Yes, me 100% totally agree. It's also really interesting to sort of hear from someone who, you know, it's a different form of activism, isn't it, from Cell was very much an individual doing the sort of biggest act of individual activism you can do in some ways by living somewhere and with a small community of people, whereas Alice is reaching out to consumers pretty much everywhere and campaigning for change that way. And obviously, yes, regulatory change, please, too.
Yeah, and it is really similar, actually, to what we're doing here at Flight Free UK in terms of that information and inspiration and just trying to get people to understand what's going on and their role in it, their individual role in it, and as a way to kind of influence the system change that we so desperately need. So, yeah, big up to Alice. She's doing some great work.
And we have one final guest to talk to. We are now meeting Ian, who is from Galba. So that's the group that are campaigning against the Bradford and Leeds Airport.
Hi, Ian. Thanks so much for joining us. It's great to speak to you. Can you start by explaining what Galba does, please?
Galba came together just to fight this one application, but I guess there's two groups of people who've come together to form Galba. There's the likes of me who have a kind of direct action background. But there's also a kind of long-standing community groups, particularly focused on transport within the northwest of Leeds. So they're more involved in the noise aspects of airport expansion. In early 2020, out of the blue, the owners of the local airport, Leeds Bradford Airport, announced new planning application to facilitate an expansion of 75% by 2030. So 75% more passengers, 75% more aircraft, 75% more carbon emissions, you know, just to the point that we need to be doing everything we can to reduce carbon. So we had a decision to make, you know, how do we fight that? Well, but what we decided to do is to fight it on planning grounds, because the only way that we'd really defeat this is if we got the application turned down. So that's what Galba's about. Galba has been dealing with the application process for over 12 months now. And so one of the first things that we did was we realized we didn't have the expertise to fight this from. So we spoke to campaigners in Bristol who were campaigning against expansion in Bristol and had just been successful in getting that application turned down. And using their advice, we raise money in order to employ a barrister. So we've got a barrister, Estelle Dahon, who worked on the Bristol case and on the Cumbrian coal mine case. She's one of the country's leading environmental barristers. So, you know, we raised £25,000 and that enabled us to engage Estelle. So that's what Galba's about. It's been understanding the planning process. We didn't understand anything about it at the beginning of last year. We've been working through that in order to counter the application.
Okay, so why should we be opposing airport expansions?
I mean, there's been a kind of understanding of climate change, and in particular the role of aircraft emissions in that is, you know, that knowledge has increased tremendously. So in back end of 2018, the airport applied to build a new terminal, and that went through without anybody even understanding what was happening. You know, I mean, it's crazy now when you think back, it just went through on a nod. I mean, the expansion is just completely ridiculous, you know, for many reasons, you know, not least the fact that Leeds City Council have declared a climate change emergency and are aiming, so they say, to reach net zero by 2030. Now, the thing is that it is utterly impossible to reach net zero by 2030 if you have aircraft expansion. You know, there's a graph of how the council are aiming to reduce carbon. And then if you map the emissions from aircraft, it goes in a completely the opposite direction. So by 2030, you know, the aircraft emissions would take up 120% of the city's entire carbon budget. So you would think, having declared a climate emergency, that they would, you know, reject this application.
And what about you on a personal level? Do you live under the flight path?
I don't, no. I kind of live on the edge of it. That wasn't the reason I got involved. But obviously, noise is a big issue as well. I wasn't really aware of that, to be honest. But it's kind of funny that, you know, we had that group in Galba who was more concerned about the noise, and then the likes of me was more concerned about emissions. And we've all kind of come together and we kind of understand each other's concerns now. So the problem is that I'm acutely aware of the noise, whereas I used to be able to ignore it. I don't think I'll be able to.
So how is it going, all the work that you're doing with Galba? How effective is the protest?
If it hadn't been for Galba, this application would have been approved probably 8-9 months ago. You know, it just would have gone through, because the planning department effectively work hand in hand with the airport owners to push this thing through. But we've delayed it and delayed it and delayed it because of the fact that they try to counter everything that we said. We're very fortunate in Leeds, by the way, to have got two lead authors from the IPCC on the staff of Leeds University. And they've been tremendous in providing kind of really scientific evidence about the impact of this expansion. Anyway, after almost 12 months, the planning department of the council approved the application.
So is that the outcome then, or what happens next?
So we have the option of going for a judicial review. However, the airport is built on the Greenbelt. And so even though the council have approved the application, because the airport's on the Greenbelt, it has to go to Robert Jenrick, the Secretary of State, for final approval, simply on that technicality. Jenrick has the ability to call in the application. Now, calling in means taking it out of the hands of the local authority and appointing a planning inspector to have a public inquiry. So that's the best thing, because if he calls this in for a public inquiry, then all that evidence that we provided last year will be properly looked at by an independent planning inspector and in public, not behind closed doors. So that's where we are now. It's still with Robert Jenrick. So all our effort is to pressurise Jenrick.
And reflecting on that, what would you say you've learned as a result of being involved in Galba?
I've learned that the system is entirely stacked in favour of expansion development. So all of the talk about addressing climate change and reducing carbon emissions, it's all talk. When push comes to shove, you know, our elected representatives are not prepared to challenge the status quo. I knew that 18 months ago, but actually going through this process, it kind of drills home that message. The other thing I've learned, I suppose, is that we can, as individuals coming together, do something about this. If it isn't us, who is it? You know, so you kind of, we've learned that we can't just sit by and complain about it.
Too right, we really can't. And again, that is a really strong message and something for us all to take away and think about, because it's so easy to not act. Whereas actually what we've learned from the last three people that we've spoken to is that we all have the power to act, and we definitely should do in any way that we want to. You know, there's lots of ways in which we can be activists, and let's go out there and campaign for change. Time to go to Destination of the Month.
Destination of the Month.
So this month, we're choosing a mountain destination that you can reach without flying. I guess mountains are all about sturdiness and strength, something that is essentially immovable, kind of like we want to be as activists. So, Anna, thinking about your favourite mountain destinations, where would you like to recommend this month?
I'm going to pick the Cairngorms in Scotland. That was a trip I did last year in the little COVID gap that we had. I took the sleeper train up to Inverness and then cycling in the Cairngorms. And the roads there are just so easy to ride. I mean, there's a lot of mountain passes. It's quite hard work, but they're so beautiful and it's easy to get around. Really spectacular, fantastic cycling, fantastic walking, if that's what you want as well. Yeah, a really good destination. But, and I'm also going to pick, so I'm going to pick one non-UK destination as well, which is the Atlas Mountains. Now, I haven't been there myself, but I really would love to. So if you take the train down through Spain and then cross over the Strait of Gibraltar on the ferry, then you're in Morocco, and it's only a short train ride to the Atlas Mountains. So that's a dream of mine that I hope sometime soon, maybe, I'll be able to do.
So my mountains of choice, I'm also going to choose two. The first are the Brecon Beacons. I grew up in Cardiff, as I've mentioned before, and my dad is a really big walking fanatic. And we used to go sort of every weekend into the Brecon Beacons. Rain, you know, hail, snow, sleet, or sunshine, but normally rain.
All the delights. And
yeah, exactly. All the delights. But I have such fond memories of that area. And then the other one is the Alps. And that is because I have been there in, again, all weathers. So for skiing, and also I've been mountain biking in the Alps and walking in the Alps, and the food and drink is so incredible. And the fact that you're in a country where they're speaking French is always, it feels like a true holiday. Those are my two mountain ranges of choice.
And we also asked our guests what their destination of the month was. So let's hear from Sel first.
I'm going to sound like a real city boy here, but I've never actually beheld a mountain myself, which is quite shameful as a nature-loving eco-warrior person. But
well, hopefully our recommendations might inspire you then, so you can go and see some of our mountains that we've suggested. And now, Alice, what would be your mountain recommendation?
I did love it when I went up Ben Nevis, because you get to the cloud level and it's so amazing when you just go into an alternate reality. It's like being on another planet. When you breach that cloud level, it's all snow, even though you're still quite warm. But see, I'm originally a geologist, you see, so I absolutely just love rocks, especially ones in Scotland, right? Anyway, I just absolutely loved it and adored it. When I got up to there with a misty, snowy, rocky landscape. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'd go up there any day.
And Ian, what about you? What's your favourite mountain?
Yeah, I've got a favourite one. I'm not sure I want to recommend it because people might all want to go. Have you heard of the Vercors in France? It's essentially a plateau just off the Rhone Valley. It's just spectacular. It's, you know, you can imagine a kind of, you know, a huge plateau with cliffs all around it. It was probably hundreds of square miles. It's just spectacular.
Wow, sounds absolutely stunning. So that's all we have time for this month, but a huge thanks to Sel, Alice and Ian for sharing their experiences with us. Hugely inspiring, and thank you very much.
And don't forget to join us next month when we will be talking about having family abroad and how that affects a flight-free pledge. See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for your company at this Flight Free podcast episode. We hope you enjoyed the journey. You can find out more about the campaign at our website, flightfree.co.uk, or find us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Flight Free UK. Until next time, stay grounded.